spending a few weeks introducing the concept of mitzvos, now it's time to discuss the mitzvos. So that's what I'd like to do. I'm starting today for who knows how long. We'll see how it goes. I'd like to start going through individual mitzvos and discussing the lessons and meanings behind each individual mitzvah. So I figure we'll start from the top, which is the very first mitzvah of the Torah, Peru Revu, to be fruitful and multiply. The mitzvah of having children. I'd like to give just an overview in terms of the laws of the mitzvahs before I get into the meaning of the mitzvah. Just a quick overview of the laws of the mitzvah. The mitzvah, which contrary to what a lot of people are aware of, it's a mitzvah only on men, not on women. Obviously, you need to have a woman to fulfill the mitzvah, but it's really not a woman's obligation from the Torah to have children. It's a man's obligation. So a woman, technically, according to the Torah law, could opt out. She doesn't have to get married, according to the Torah law, and have children. But she could opt out. Obviously, that's not recommended, and women are definitely encouraged to get married and have children. And we'll talk about other reasons as well to have children. But according to the strict Torah law, be fruitful and multiply, that's a law on men. The mitzvah, according to the Torah, is to have at least two children, one male, one female, a boy and a girl. So somebody has had, seven girls, and they're still waiting for a boy, so they haven't yet fulfilled the Torah requirement. Obviously, that's not always in our control, and if a person's not able to have any children, or can't have the right gender of children, that's Hashem's business, not our business. As long as we're trying, then we're doing our obligation. The minimal requirement according to Torah law is one boy, one girl. That's the minimal requirement according to Torah law.
Do you have any other opinions? I've heard somebody say something.
It's a dispute in a Mishnah. Okay. And that's the halacha is like the one that says a boy and a girl.
That's
yeah.
What I
right.
And then I heard this weekend someone told me that boy and a girl and one other. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, we'll talk about there is an idea of having more than two kids, which obviously if you look at most Orthodox families, you see that. But there is an idea of having several children, but according to strict Torah law, the obligation is two children, a boy and a girl. That's the halakha. Now, even once we surpass our Torah obligation, so the rabbis bring in the Talmud two different sources of having more kids than that. One source is based on a verse in, I think it's in Koheles, and it says, "Babokir zaras zarecha, ve'erev al tanach yadecha." You should plant your seed in the morning, and in the evening, you should not hold back. So they use that as a source that one should have children, as soon as they can, and even continue on as life moves along. Just to continue having children even after you've already planted your original seeds. That's one source brought in the Gemara. Gemara has another source, which is a pasuk from the prophet. It says, "Lo sohu bera l'sheva sitzara." Hashem didn't create the world for nothingness. Hashem created the world to be settled. So if Hashem wants the world settled, that means that we have to create settlers, people to settle the world. So Chazal used both of those different sources to say that even one who has already fulfilled their minimum obligation of two children should continue having more children as time goes on. Those are rabbinic ideas, those are not Torah obligations. And once you get into the realm of the rabbinic ideas, there's obviously a lot more room for leniency, people who don't feel they can handle it, can't afford it, etc. Not my discussion right now, but those obligations also are incumbent upon women. So even though women may not have the Torah obligation and be fruitful and multiply, the idea of settling God's world does apply to women as well, according to most sources. Another important point is that I mentioned before, having children is not always within our hands. Number one, we have to find a suitable marriage partner. And then Hashem has to grant the couple the ability to have children. People, unfortunately, contrive for years and years and years and aren't able to have children. It's common. So how does that fit in with this mitzvah? So the Gemara explains, there's a famous quote in the Gemara, Masechta Shabbos. It talks about six questions that they'll ask you, that God will ask you on the Day of Judgment. When a person dies, goes up to God, it talks about six questions that shall be asked. So one of those questions is, Asakta Vapiriya Varivya. Did you evolve yourself in being fruitful and multiplying? Did you evolve yourself in reproducing? It's one of the questions. But the key word is, did you involve yourself in it? The question isn't, did you have kids? The question is, did you involve yourself in attempting to have kids? Is the one way to understand that question. Because the results, again, aren't in our hands. We can't always control finding a marriage partner. We can't control what gender we have. We can't control having children at all. That's Hashem's decision. But at least our job is to be involved in it. We have to make sure we go through the right steps to try to have children. And then the results are in Hashem's hands. So the question is asked, Asakta Vapiriya Varivya, Asakta, which means did you involve yourself in the process of Vapiriya Varivya? So somebody who decides, I don't want to get married, doesn't try to find a marriage partner, so they're not involved in the self in it. People who are married but don't attempt to have children, they're not involved in the mitzvah. People who are trying to do the mitzvah just aren't able to, so that's Hashem's decision, not ours, and we've done our part. Past that, it's Hashem's decision. So that's just another important part of this mitzvah, is that it's not always within our means. Other mitzvahs, you know, we can decide, you know, am I going to eat this kosher food or not? That's my decision. Having children requires Hashem's input as well, and that input is based on Hashem's decision, not my decision. So that's another important part of it. So that's just the basic halachic overview. Obviously, there's a lot more details and discussion we could have on the mitzvah in terms of the halacha. I want to get more to the lessons of the mitzvah. So the we said last week how mitzvahs could have several lessons and several meanings. And today I hope to go through maybe four or five different approaches to the mitzvah. And it's possible they're all true. It doesn't mean that only one is true. It could be they're all part of Hashem's intent in giving us this mitzvah. So number one, which is this is one approach in the sources, is that Hashem created the world with all necessary parts. Hashem created animals, Hashem created people, Hashem created plants, Hashem created trees, Hashem created the laws of nature and science. Everything in the world Hashem created as He wanted it to be. Which means that Hashem wants every species to remain as well. If Hashem decided there should be, and it even applies to animals, let's say, Hashem decided there should be elephants in the world, so Hashem would like the elephant species to continue on. Hashem decided there should be squirrels in the world, so Hashem wants squirrels to continue on. Hashem doesn't want the squirrels to become extinct. I don't want to get into, should we now go and fight for saving the whales? I don't want to talk about that at this time. But Hashem does want every species which He created to remain in existence. So when it comes to animals have an instinct to reproduce. And animals kind of build their lives and structure their day and their life around reproduction. Human beings, we have free choice. And there are people who opt not to have children. That's an option that many people choose that they don't want to have children. It's a choice humans make. Animals don't make that decision. Animals have an instinct, they follow their instinct. So Hashem, in being that He wants the human race to continue and exist, so Hashem tells the humans, you're obligated to have children. So that's one simple meaning. Hashem wants every part of His world which He created to continue on. And this actually is the reason for other mitzvahs as well. For instance, there's a mitzvah taking two different fruits,
cross-pollinating,
or another one. You know what I mean.
Well, like I'm having taking broccoli and cauliflower mixed together, you can't eat that combination.
Exactly, right. So the, grafting. Grafting two different trees, two different fruits, so the Torah says you can't graft fruits, or even crossbreed animals. So, like for instance, a nectarine is a cross between a peach and a plum. That's correct, right? Nectarine, a peach, and a plum. So a Jew would not have been allowed to create the nectarine. We can eat it once it's created, but we're not allowed to create that type of fruit because Hashem says these are the species I created. This is how I want my world to be. You cannot create new species. I don't want you to create a new species of fruit, of an animal. I'm crossbreeding animals, creating new species of animal. I don't want you to do that. And those are all mitzvahs in the Torah. Because Hashem says, I created the world perfect, it has everything it needs, and when you add to something perfect, you actually detract. You take a beautiful painting, and you add on a little extra paint, you've now destroyed the painting. Hashem's world is perfect, He has everything He needs in the world. Once you add to the world, then you are, if you're changing a species, that's also a problem. So we're not changing the human species, but my point is that Hashem wants the species to be as He created them. So the human species has to continue onwards. That's one very simple explanation of Pru Ragu. And therefore, since humans have the option, and humans may choose not to have children, Hashem says, you may not make that choice, you need to have children.
What about if somebody can't and they adopt? Does that count as because they're continuing on with
the... Good question. According to most authorities, it does count. Because raising a child is almost tantamount to having the child. So the child needs a parent to raise the child as well. So according to most authorities, say that also counts as a mitzvah.
I have a question. It might be silly, but you know, sometimes you see people say a white person marrying a Latino Ethiopian, but they're Jewish. Is that considered a mixed breed?
That's not different breeds. It's actually a question. It's not different breeds. They're all humans.
Okay. So
it's all considered the human race. So the so that's one simple reason for the mitzvah. Now the reasons go on. The famous Sefer Achinuch, which is a work which talks about all the mitzvahs and gives understanding of the lessons for the mitzvahs, he says two additional points. in addition to the fact that Hashem wants the race to continue, but Hashem also wants his world to be settled. He wants the world which is settled. Meaning that the world Hashem created, not just to have all these different things, but with a purpose. And we need somebody to be here to settle the world and unlock its purpose. So the only humans actually settle the world. Animals live in the world, but you know, they go about their day, they follow their instincts, they eat, they reproduce, they die. They don't actually unlock what the world has to offer. They don't take advantage of the world. They don't bring out what the purpose of the world. They just do what they're programmed to do and move on. The human being is the one who settles the world and utilizes the world to its full potential. So Hashem wants his world to be settled. Hashem didn't create the world just for it to be used here and there, and just you eat a little bit, you sleep a little bit, and you die. Hashem wanted the world to be fully settled and taken advantage of. So therefore, Hashem wants humans around. So that goes beyond just maintaining a species. Maintaining a species could apply to a cow or an elephant as well. But Hashem wants specifically the human species to be around because we're the ones who actually settle this world. The world should be meyushav, which is echoing the verse we quoted before, lo so vera, Hashem did create the world for nothingness, l'Hashem asitzura, Hashem created the world for being settled. Hashem wants his world settled. So that's another approach, not just to maintain the race, but also to make sure the world is utilized, settled, and the human being is the one who unlocks really the secrets of the world. I mean, think about the, nowadays we have so much technology, a GPS system. So Hashem created the ability for a GPS system to be in existence when Hashem created the world. It's just that you need the human mind to figure out how to actually form that. So it took, thousands of years of human intelligence to bring out the secrets of the GPS system to actually be utilized. But that's part of settling Hashem's world. Hashem says, conquer the world, settle it, use it. I locked a lot of powerful, powerful secrets into this world. Just use your mind and bring those out. So nowadays, you really see it. When you look at the technology, you look at a computer, you look at a GPS system, you look at advances in medicine, those were there from the beginning. These aren't new. They weren't just created yesterday. It's just that we had to have the human mind to bring these out from Hashem's world. So that's the idea of settling the world. Now, in addition to settling the world, Hashem wants people to perform mitzvos, which is a uniquely Jewish mission. And the idea behind that is when Hashem creates the world has a purpose. And part of the purpose is the world should be settled and utilized, but not just for our own benefit. It should be utilized for Hashem's purpose, for Hashem's end goals. Hashem's end goals are that His will should be fulfilled through human beings. Hashem created the human being with free choice. No other creation has free choice. So Hashem's goal in this world, the divine purpose of the world, is to have a human being fulfilling his will and working towards Hashem's goals. So to take that back, to expand the idea a little bit, when Hashem created the world, Hashem doesn't create the world for no reason. Hashem doesn't do things without a reason. No, only we do things without a reason. Hashem always has a purpose in what he does. So creation had a purpose, and the purpose is ultimately to have a being which is able to fulfill God's will. And obviously it's a much broader discussion, deeper discussion, why it had to be that way. But that's the idea, that Hashem had a purpose to be fulfilled in the creation of the world. And the tool, or the mechanism that will fulfill the purpose of the human being. Animals don't have free choice. So an animal can't come in and choose to fulfill Hashem's will. Animals do what Hashem told them to, because that's how they're programmed. Angels also don't have free choice. Angels do what Hashem wants them to do, but they're also programmed to do it. The only being in existence that has free choice, based on all of our sources, is the human being. And Hashem desires that we come into a world and that we can actually choose right from wrong, truth from what's false, and perform His will. So therefore, Hashem says, I need to have the human around. Not only just because I want to have my world settled, not only because I want to have the race, the human race in existence, but I need people to be here to fulfill my mission. And my mission is having an entity which makes choices and chooses my will as their will. That's the purpose of creation. So, and that's what the Sefer HaChinuch's quote is, that he says, because of people reproducing, through that, every mitzvah is fulfilled. Because now people, you can't have mitzvahs either. So Hashem needs people to have mitzvahs. And Hashem wants the world so that people can recognize Him, acknowledge Him, and fulfill His will. That's why Hashem wants the world here. Hashem has no purpose in a world beyond that. Again, that's a much bigger discussion, how that works out, why that is, why Hashem needs us. But that is why Hashem wants the world. Hashem, based on the many, many sources, Hashem wants the world so that the human being can choose to recognize Hashem himself. So without human beings, then the world would not be fulfilling its purpose in any way, shape, or form. So our mitzvah of reproducing is so we can create more of these human beings that can fulfill God's will in the world. Okay, so to build on this idea, so you see we're kind of moving, you know, deeper and deeper into the reason of the mitzvah. But each different level of understanding has its own lesson to it. There is a lesson that every species is important. There is a lesson that the world should be settled and utilized. And there is a lesson that the human being is the focus of creation, because the human being fulfills God's mission. Now, to take that a little bit deeper, we have the words of Rabbeinu Bachaya. Rabbeinu Bachaya was one of the early commentaries in the Torah. His commentary is especially interesting because he takes the Torah and he will explain it from different perspectives. So he'll say, this is the simple meaning. This is the meaning which would come from a more intellectual understanding. This is the meaning which comes from a more Kabbalistic understanding. And in his commentary, he'll take some approaches to a part of the Torah. So he describes that, what was the purpose of the mitzvah of reproducing? He says that the purpose of this mitzvah is to be able to bring about, his wording is the nefesh sichlus, which refers to the soul. Hashem needs to have a being into which he can infuse the soul, the divine part of the world. And to expand upon what he means is that part of the purpose of the world, number one, is to have a world, is to have a human being recognize Hashem. But human being recognizing Hashem actually brings Hashem's presence into the world. Without the human being doing what's right, performing mitzvos, recognizing God, so the world is going to be void of the holiness of God, void of God's presence. The human being is the one who's able to draw God's presence into the world, which is why, for instance, the avos, the patriarchs, are referred to as the Merkava Lishchina. They are the resting place for God's divine presence, because they're the ones who are able to bring that divine presence into the world. Before you had people like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so then Hashem's presence in the world is limited. But the human being is the one who's able to draw holiness into this world. So people become the platform for the Shekhinah itself. And that's the idea. So the goal is when and the way that works out with the human being, one there's many ways it works with the human being. One way is that we have a soul. The human soul is a piece of God in this world. And sometimes the soul can be buried, and we don't recognize the soul. We don't see the soul in a person. But a person is actually an upstanding person, making the right decisions, acting divine. So you can see an element of spirituality in that person, and you recognize the divine spirit resting on that person at all parts of the day. So when the patriarchs are called, they are the platform of the Shekhinah, because when somebody saw Abraham, they saw God. They can see, I see this person is a godly person, and through him I recognize there's a God in the world. When we see a great tzaddik, we should have that same feeling, that through viewing this person, I can recognize there's a greater power in the world. Somebody who can see the face of there's actually a story I heard that somebody once saw, somebody who was a Jew, who was not religious, they once saw a picture of Moshe Feinstein. And because of the picture, the person decided to become religious. They said, I saw in that picture something far beyond this world. It wasn't even him, it was a picture they saw. But so he just looked so divine, so godly, it inspired this person to learn more about Judaism, become observant, from seeing that picture. The idea there's a famous blessing we give to our children, Amal HaGolosim Mikol Ra. The angel who redeemed me from all evil should bless the children, the Karabim Shemi, call them by my name, this is Yaakov speaking. The Mishima Vasai, the name of my father's Abraham Yitzchak, Vidigulam Kavar. So the blessing that Yaakov gives his children, and that we also give to our children, is that Hashem should bless them, and they should be called by my name, Yaakov says, and by Abraham Yitzchak's name. So the way I believe the Rambam explains that blessing, I think it's the Rambam. He says that when somebody sees a Jewish child, they should automatically know this is a child of Abraham. This is a child who has real spiritual divine roots. Because when you see a Jewish child, they should just emanate holiness, emanate purity, emanate the divine. That's the blessing that we give to our children. But the idea is that the human being, especially the Jew, we're supposed to bring that divine presence into the world. So Rabbeinu Bachaya explains, why does Hashem want us to have children? It's not just we want to populate the world. But we want to actually have a people who can bring divine presence to the world. So he actually kind of discredits the opinion that we're just trying to populate the world. He says that's not the reason. Hashem doesn't want a world that's populated. Hashem wants a world which is uplifted and spiritual. That's the world Hashem wants out of us. So Hashem infuses His Shekhinah, His divine presence, into the human being. So another reason why we have a mitzvah to reproduce is for that purpose, that we want to be able to create human beings who can carry within them the divine presence. Okay. So I think all the reasons we just gave are kind of a chain which go together. It's all, we have to have human beings in the world so that the world's populated, the race continues, so that mitzvahs can be accomplished, and so that Hashem's divine presence can rest in the world. So there's a very different approach which is taken by the Abarbanel. Abarbanel was a much later commentary he's a very late Rishon in terms of the periods of the commentators. And the Abarbanel, he lived in Spain. He also has a very fascinating commentary on the Torah. And the Abarbanel gives a different reason as to why Hashem commanded us to have children. And he says a very interesting thing. He says that people are created very different than animals. And as we already said a few times, animals work on instinct. Animals are supposed to, and they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to just follow their instincts, supposed to eat, drink, sleep, reproduce, and die. That's what they do. The human being is very different. We're created with an neshama, and we're created with the human intellect. And part of the hallmark of a human being is that we have our human intellect and we have our neshama. That's what distinguishes us from an animal. We have a lot of animal parts to us as well. We also eat, drink, reproduce. But beyond that, we have our minds and we have our soul. So the Abarbanel says that we may make a mistake and think that our focus should not be at all on preserving our species, but our focus is to become totally spiritual. We should try to reach just total spiritual and intellectual fulfillment and totally ignore our animal parts. That's a mistake a human being can make. And it's a logical mistake, because when you do the difference between human and animal, you see, the animal does not have the soul, animal doesn't have the intellect I have, animal follow instincts. I have a mind, I have a soul, and my goal is totally different. And it's true that when it comes to an animal, it's very important to preserve the species. And it's another interesting concept, is that when it comes to Hashem's hashgacha, His providence and His guidance over the world, many of the early sources describe that when it comes to a human being, Hashem guides each individual human being. When it comes to animals, Hashem doesn't guide each individual animal, but Hashem just helps to preserve the race. So Hashem doesn't care about Bessie the cow, and Larry the cow, and Fred the cow. Hashem cares about cows. But the fact that this cow decided to eat some grass right now, and that cow is running over there near the fence, and the other cow is sleeping, that's not necessarily relevant to Hashem's plan in the world. When it comes to a human being, every single human being is individually important. It's not just that we're part of a species, but every individual human being is part of Hashem's divine plan. Every action we do impacts the world one way or the other. Every single person is necessary for Hashem's world to reach its final goal. Not every single cow. The race of cows is, but not every single individual cow. This famous concept that the Sefer Chinuch describes. So when we view ourselves, we don't view the preservation of the human race necessarily an ideal. The ideal is self-fulfillment. I should become spiritual, intellectual, divine, elevated, uplifted. So Abarbanel says there may be a tendency to ignore reproducing. Now people, and as many religions do, a lot of religions, the clergy become celibate, and they won't marry, they won't have children. And Abarbanel says that's not what Hashem wants out of us, and it's the opposite. The Kohen Gadol had to have a wife. He could not serve on Yom Kippur without a wife. Our greatest, Moshe had a wife, all of our greatest tzaddikim, our greatest leaders, all were married and had children. That's a Jewish leader. And there's a reason for that. That's what Hashem wants us. That's how Hashem wants the world to be. Hashem doesn't want our leaders to be celibate. Hashem doesn't want our leaders not to marry. So again, the Kohen Gadol had to have a wife in Yom Kippur, or else he wasn't allowed to do the service in Yom Kippur if he wasn't married. The Gemara goes to the point discussing maybe he had a backup wife because his wife died right before Yom Kippur, so he'd get married right away and be able to serve, because he had to have a wife. So what would happen if she died in Yom Kippur? He'd have to stop the self-service. So there's a discussion, should he have a backup wife just in case? Just a strange concept in our minds, but at least to allow him to fulfill the service in Yom Kippur. So the Abarbanel says, so Hashem directs us that we have to reproduce. We should not remain celibate. We shouldn't be totally living up in the spiritual realms. We have to evolve ourselves in this world. and Hashem wants a race to continue on. The goal isn't that for each person's, it's not only each person's individual fulfillment, but it's also that we should carry on in the human race. And to add to that, you know, we believe that Hashem created this world not to be ignored, but to be used as a tool for the divine. Hashem didn't make us angels, and Hashem didn't place us in the spiritual. Hashem put us in a physical world as physical beings, which means that Hashem wants us to use every single part of this world as a tool for spirituality, but not to be ignored. Which is what the Torah tries. The Torah teaches us how to balance and how to utilize the world for spiritual reasons, but doesn't tell us to ignore the world. So the Torah allows us to eat and drink and enjoy. It tells us to eat kosher food, make a bracha before and after. Don't mix meat and milk. Don't eat on certain days. Eat more other days. That's the Torah tells us how to use the food for spiritual reasons. Hashem says get married and have children, but there's laws of nida. There's laws which keep husband and wife separate certain times and come together at certain times. And that's part of the Torah's way of teaching us how to balance our physical side with our spiritual side. But the Torah doesn't say to ignore good food, ignore family life, and just, you know, spend the entire day, you know, up in the spiritual realm, praying. That's not what the Torah tells us to do. We're supposed to be involved in the physical world. So the barbell describes, since we have a tendency to think we're supposed to be totally spiritual, Hashem has to say, no, have children, get married, that's part of what you do in this world. And through that, the human race will carry on.
I just want to ask something. I went there to share at the show last night with Mr. Rosenbaum.
Yeah.
She's talking about the spiritual. She says, you can't be completely spiritual because we can't relate to it. We don't understand it. So we have to do things in physical. And she said, that's why we have all mitzvahs for doing physical things.
Right. Good.
So
yeah.
It's only we can relate to.
Right. Because we're physical. we are physical. But the mitzvahs allow us to take the physical and uplift it. You know, we don't just eat whatever we want. We eat what the Torah says is spiritually healthy for us to eat. That's the idea. So this is the idea of the barbanel. And it's an interesting idea because it really addresses an essential foundation of Torah, which is that it's our job to take Hashem's world and use it within balance and within moderation for the spiritual. We shouldn't go overboard in physical pleasure either. Should go overboard in physicality. We have to be spiritual people, and you know, we have to tap into our neshama. But we have both a neshama, and we also have a body. And to intermingle, it won't doubt the other, doesn't get us anywhere. The Gemara gives an analogy. It talks about there's a vineyard, and the king needed to hire some guards to watch his vineyard. But he's worried. I'm worried that they're going to steal my grapes. So he says, I have an idea. I'm going to hire two guards. One of them will be blind, and one of them will be crippled. So the blind guy can't steal on his own because, you know, he can't even see what he's doing. And the guy's crippled, can't walk away. But the two of them together, so if somebody comes in to steal the grapes, so then the crippled guy will tell the blind guy what to do, and he'll stop it. That was the plan. So the Gemara continues on, and the Gemara says that the two guys had an idea. He says, you go on my shoulders. So the blind guy puts the crippled guy on his shoulders, and they go around stealing all the grapes. And when the king comes and says, where are my grapes? They said, well, I couldn't have stolen them, I can't walk. I could have stolen them, I can't see. So the king says, you know what I'm going to do? And so I'll put you on his back, and I'll punish you both together. That's the end of the Gemara. And the lesson of that Gemara is how come, when it comes to divine reward and punishment, the body and soul both are involved. Ultimately, we talk about the resuscitation of the dead, where there is some sort of ultimate reward for the body and the soul together. Because a human being is both, a body and a soul. And in terms of what the Gemara's lesson is, it's that the soul can see, has a clarity, but the soul is crippled. The soul can't do anything in this world without a body. And the body can't see anything. The body, really, when it comes to the truth, it's kind of stupid. You can't really see anything. But the body can act. So you put the two together, the body is supposed to be used as a platform for the soul. So now the soul in this world can't interact at all, because the soul is spiritual. But you put the soul in a body, the soul can interact with the world. The body can't really do much productive in the world without a soul teaching what to do. So the two together create the human being. But that means that we're supposed to be body and soul, they're both necessary, we have to make sure we elevate both. And we can reach a point where our bodies are so elevated, there's the famous idea that the body of a tzaddik doesn't even decompose in the grave. In which I've actually heard people who have actually disinterred bodies have told me they've seen this before. I actually spoke to somebody who he told me he actually once dug up somebody's body and it was totally whole, as was the day of death, several years later. And there are tzaddikim out there which their bodies won't even decompose in the grave because their bodies have been so elevated. But it's still a body. And we have bodies, and our bodies have to be, if our body is only doing spiritual things. Our body is taking in food, which is kosher, with a bracha, etc. So our body is becoming spiritual. And then our body won't physically decompose like physical things do. But I'm getting a little off topic here. So Abarbanel says the reason that Hashem says you have to be fruitful and multiply is because Hashem wants to be sure that people don't become too involved in spirituality and ignore the physical. So that's a kind of a different approach to the other ones. I want to add in a few minutes. I want to add in just one or two more thoughts to this whole idea. Be fruitful and multiply. Number one is that when we look at life, so we can look at it in two ways. We can look at ourselves as, you know, we're here in a limited span of history. You know, we do what we can do, we try to accomplish, then we die, and our time here is over. So we can view it. Or we can view ourselves as part of the continuum of all history. I mean, there's a long history of the world, there's a future and there's a past. We're here at one point in a very, very long span of history. We see ourselves in that picture, so we're actually continuing on something that was before and leaving it off the generation after us. So I'm not only here to perform my own mission in my life, but I'm also a link in a long chain of people in the world. So I have parents, and I have children, and I'm a link in between my parents and my children, and God willing, that will continue on for, you know, eternally, until the end of the days. And we view it that way, we understand that having children, being fruitful, the idea of being fruitful and multiplying, it's telling us that our lives aren't isolated. It's not that I have to fulfill my own purpose in life and I'm done. It's that, you know, I'm one piece, I'm one building block in the whole structure of history. And in Hashem's world, there's a certain goal which we're trying to achieve. And the goal isn't performed by any one person in any one generation, but it's a collective goal of all the people of the world in all of history. And every single generation, we're getting closer to fulfilling Hashem's mission. And, you know, we might be able to speed up at the end of days, but we're all part of a process. So the idea of this mitzvah is that we have to view ourselves as part of a process. We're supposed to have children pass on what we've done. Our children should pick up where we left off. And we pass on what we believe and what we accomplish to our children. And we hope that they're able to take what we've done in our lifetime, expand on it, and achieve even more. That's what we hope. The idea, if you look at the language that the Torah describes the mitzvah with, it's called peru revu, be fruitful and multiply. The idea of a fruit, everyone's described, a fruit contains another seed. The idea being, we currently could have said multiply, have children. But it says be fruitful and multiply. Because the idea of a fruit is that the fruit in itself contains this another seed. That fruit can produce even more fruit, and more fruit, and more trees, and more fruit. It's the idea of being fruitful. So in this concept, of viewing ourselves as just, you know, one link in a long chain. Having children is supposed to be a child who then will carry on to their children, and their children, and their children. It's a fruit. The fruit contains the seed for the next tree. And the tree will now grow more fruits that contain more seeds from another tree. And it happens to be, it's interesting, halachically, if somebody has a child who, God forbid, is unable to have children, that child does not fulfill the obligation of peru revu. So someone knows that medically this child is unable to have kids, they would have to have, say, a third child to fulfill their mitzvah. Because the mitzvah of peru revu is to have children who are also able to carry on after them, which is another interesting halacha.
How would you know that? Because you don't find that out until later.
Right. You don't necessarily know right away. It could be it's too late by the time you find that also. But technically, that is the halacha. But to view ourselves as part of the structure of history, and to understand that history is a build-up. It's not only have my one mission right now, and once I die, I'm gone, but I'm part of a long chain of history. And there's the concept of the Masorah of the Jewish people, from Mount Sinai onwards, we have a Masorah we pass on, we have our oral tradition. People carry on the mission from where their parents left off, and the previous generation left off, and move on from there. So that's one reflection on this mitzvah, which is an important reflection. Understand, you know, our place vis-a-vis our parents and our children. And the truth is, like we said before, not everyone can have children. Not everyone is able to be married, not everyone is able to have children. But there's all another two ways which one can at least, in a conceptual sense, fulfill this mitzvah. Besides adopting is one way you can actually do it in a halachic sense. But in a conceptual sense, the rabbis teach us that students are like children as well. And the concept there is that people who we influence also carry on what we believe in. So if the idea is that I'm part of a continuum and that I pass on to another generation what I myself have accomplished, so if you influence someone else, teach someone else, impact someone else's life, and they're a student of yours, so then you're actually, it's as if you've given birth to them in a certain sense because they're carrying on that which you've accomplished in your lifetime. So the rabbis teach us that students are equivalent to children. And then there's one other concept which it discusses concerning Noach. In the Torah, it introduces Noach. It says, Ela told us Noach. These are the offspring of Noach. Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a righteous man. So Rashi explains, well, they should continue on listing as kids. These are the offspring of Noach, and then list their names. Shem, Ham, Yafes. I'd say these are offspring of Noach. Noach was righteous. So it sounds like being righteous was his offspring, is what it sounds like. So the Rashi explains, based on the Medrash, Rashi says that the mitzvos and good deeds of a righteous person are also considered his offspring. And the concept of that is that because the mitzvos of a righteous person also produce. They're productive. They impact others. They bring holiness into the world, as we described. They bring the world towards its purpose. So just like we said, human beings are here to bring the world towards its purpose. Human beings are here to bring the divine presence into the world. Human beings are here to be part of a continuum, leading the world towards its ultimate goal. So when a righteous person performs good deeds, and they're coming, you know, from his heart, and from the sincere devotion to Hashem, so those good deeds also are like his children, because they've also brought the world closer to its purpose. They've also brought divine presence into the world. So that's something, and they're coming from within him. Just like our children are a piece of us. Somebody who sincerely does a mitzvah or a good action, that's also a piece of who they are. A piece of their heart has been expressed. If we just haphazardly do a mitzvah, so we're not expressing our hearts necessarily. When we express our heart, it's an expression of ourselves. It's like our children are an expression of ourselves as well. So these are two ways, even when it doesn't come to physical children, is conceptually the concept of teaching and impacting and performing mitzvos and good deeds is also conceptually equivalent to reproducing in terms of children. These are all different perspectives on the mitzvah. Again, I'm sure there's many more. This is just one level of viewing it. But we have to see that every mitzvah does have its several levels of meaning. And even those of us who maybe past having children, or don't have children, or whatever it may be, but we can still pull out the lessons of the mitzvah, even when we're not performing the mitzvah. So the lessons are important lessons, it's a perspective on the world. Viewing the world as a place with a mission, the human being as the goal of the mission, understanding the element of the physical versus spiritual, these are all lessons which apply to daily life, even for people who may or may not be involved in the mitzvah per se, at the present time. So every single mitzvah has its eternal lesson, which applies daily, even when the action may not be applicable daily. Any questions?
Oh, I just wanted to mention